Welcome to the Board Game Barbecue, possibly the fastest growing board game community in the world. We are more than just a podcast. Join us on Discord to play games all the time with people from all over the world on platforms like Tabletop Simulator, Tabletopia, Board Game Arena, and any others. Join us in our Facebook community to discuss not only the topics of the week that come up in our podcast, but also the board game bracket and anything board games. But we still are a podcast. Thank you for tuning in and enjoy the show. The Board Game Barbecue, brought to you by Addicts, Not Experts. Hello and welcome to the Board Game Barbecue podcast. I'm your host, Steve, and we've got every chair filled around the table tonight. We've got five of us, so not only myself, but we've also got two regular Board Game Barbecue podcasters in Mike. How you doing, bud?
I'm very good, thanks, Steve. How are we doing today?
Yeah, I'm very well, thank you. And joining Mike and I from the podcast is Jules. How you doing, bud?
I'm doing great. Thanks, Steve.
And that would mean that we must have two guests, which we do have. This is another one of our Oceania Month episodes. We have two board game creators, board game designers, joining us, which is very exciting. Locals, well, we're going to call Ollie a local, I guess, but we've got Oliver Millen from Board Citizen. How you doing?
Hello. Hi, everyone. Good to be back.
Yeah, glad to have you back. So if you missed it, very early on in our probably early teens episode, maybe?
Episode 20.
Thank you.
Episode 20. 65 episodes ago.
60 years.
When you were butter baby.
So if you remember, we had a segment with Ollie, we called it Beyond the Board, and it kind of led into this idea that, you know what, we should just interview people as part of our show. So it was kind of like the bit of a, like the first one that sort of started that whole thing. So I think, and Ollie paved the path, because I'm pretty sure the next guest we had on was Andrew Bosley and then Jamie Stegmeier. So,
that's right. You know, a major rating skyrocket.
Yeah, we had to drop down a bit from Ollie to get those guys, but yeah, it's all good. And the other gentleman joining us is another guy who has done a lot for board games, especially up here in Queensland. It is Jack from Half Monster Games. How you doing, bud?
Yeah, really good. Thank you for having me on, boys.
Again, our pleasure. Lovely to have you both join the show. So if you're listening to the show for the first time, we run some regular segments, including our sizzling games, which we're about to jump to. We'll then have our topic of the week, where we'll talk to both Jack and Ollie about how they go about the games that they've created and just what they enjoy about the hobby, etc. Then we'll follow that up with our segment about our 2020 awards, which we'll get into kids, family, and party games today. And then we'll finish it off, as always, by swearing an oath, which we're looking forward to seeing what Ollie and Jack can do for that.
Mm-hmm. I've got a big list. Yeah. Very big list.
So kicking us off with the sizzling games, before we get to that, just a quick mention that we have a competition going this month, the month of March, to win a game called Whistle Mountain, which I have been playing lately and is a lot of fun. It's just a real lot of fun. So it's a Scott Caputo and Luke Laurie game from Bezier Games. And thanks to 2D6 Games, who are sponsoring the sizzle this month, they're giving away a copy at the end of the month. And in a quite unique way, the only way you can enter this competition is to go to our Facebook page and find the post and comment with the most you've ever paid for shipping for a game. And boy, there are some doozies in there.
Shockers.
Oh,
my God. Yeah.
And of course, the reason for that is that the 2D6 games offer free shipping Australia wide for all orders. So it's just a comparison. You know, I haven't seen anyone yet say, I have paid $0 for shipping because I always order from 2D6. Yeah. So no one's going the brown nose, right?
Yeah, we do a lot with Dan and Dave from 2D6, and they're just so good. They like drive all around every night in Brisbane. It's really amazing.
Yeah, I don't know when they spend time with their families, but
probably in the car with them.
Yeah, they're going for a road trip, family into the car. Okay, so Sizzling Games, we're going to start it off by sending it over to Mike. What have you got?
Okay, so I've been, speaking of party games, I've been playing a new party game recently that I got sent. It's called Stay Cool. It's a very, very fun party game. I like those games that sort of is a word like word salad, where you know what you want to say, but it's on the tip of your tongue. You just can't get it out. It's a game that just puts you under pressure, and it makes it a lot of fun. So how the game sort of works, there's only like four main components of the game. You've got, I think, five die, And the die have all these letters all over them. No particular order. I think the only thing that is that the white die, which is two of them, have vowels on them. So with those dice, what's going to happen, one person to your left or right is going to ask you a series of questions from a card. And every question they ask you, you have to answer that question by spelling a 4 or 5 letter word with the die. So it's a bit of a pain, you know, looking through all the die and trying to spell it out. And that's fine. That's not, you know, a whole game. What makes it the game is that there's a person on the other side of you who's asking you questions that you have to verbally answer. So it becomes a race of how many questions can you answer from both people in a certain amount of time? You have a timer as well that's being flipped around, and the timer can flip 4 times. It's got 30 seconds each time it flips. If you pass a question, the sound timer goes to the next space, which means you have less time to answer questions, so you don't really want to pass. So it becomes pretty fun. You're trying to spell out a word, and it's even funnier when you don't actually tell people that they're getting the word wrong. So I asked a mate of mine, I said, oh, I need a, what do you call rain that freezes? And I could see he was writing snow. I'm like, that's not it, but I'm not going to tell you. And once he finished writing it, no, I finally got it. Nope, try again, you know? And he's answering the other person's question at the same time. And if that's not hard enough, there's 2 more steps to the game. So once you finish the first round that everyone has a go doing those 2 things at once, it's then your turn as the active player who's answering all the questions to tell them when to flip the timer. If you don't tell them when to flip the timer, by the time the time runs out, you just lose. You don't get to answer any more questions. The next round that happens is they hide the timer behind the box and you still have to tell them. So you're most likely saying timer and it's halfway through. So you've only got, 15 seconds each way. It just becomes a lot of fun. It's a lot of laughs, plays really, really quick. Anyone can get into it. It's Stay Cool. It's a lot of fun from Scorpion Mask.
Sounds like chaos in a box.
It is. It is. It's when we pulled it out, it was a lot of fun. And I haven't had any guests over lately, and I've been quite busy, but I know that my housemates, every time guests come over, they're like, hey, Mike, do you mind if we pull out Stay Cool? And they've been pulling it out every time. They have friends over right now, and an hour ago they were playing Stay Cool because they wanted to give it a go and show them the new game. So it's been a big hit in the house. Everyone's enjoying it. And I always love just a cool, fun game to loosen the mood, especially with new gamers. Mm. You don't need to have ever played a game to play this one, and it just, gets the brain juices flowing, creates a few laughs, eases everyone up, or to break up a big game. Perfect. Stay Cool.
I love those sorts of games where the questions are so simple, but because you're multitasking, you feel like a giant idiot. It reminds me of, I'm sure everyone's played this. If you haven't, go play it. It's Anomia.
Yes.
That game, it's so simple. You're just watching for shapes to match, and as soon as those shapes match, you have to say a word that relates to the opponent's word that you matched with. But because you're watching your card to see if it matches, you often end up saying something related to your card, but you have to do the opponent. It's just brilliant. It's so simple, but you are the biggest idiot. Like, it'll be something like dessert, and you just have to say anything that relates to dessert, but you just cannot think of anything because of the time pressure. You have to beat the other person. It's just awesome. But yeah, that sounds really fun, Mike. I'd be keen to give
really
that a
fun
go.
Game. That'll be making my way up with me to Brisbane for the game day. Mm. As long as I can get there, that'll be making my way up there to teach a few people for sure.
That's so exciting. I'm so keen to meet everyone.
So am I, mate. So am I.
I want to know, Mike, in your plays, how many times has someone just gone, just shut up. I need to concentrate on this.
I love it because I'm sitting there just repeating the question in their face just to put the pressure on and get them going. If you want to see how the game plays, I've actually just recently uploaded a review, my very first review for the Board Game Barbecue onto our YouTube channel. And I've actually stuck in the middle there just a few examples of how the game actually plays. I recorded a bit of gameplay with some friends. So if you want to see what the game actually looks like to get a feel for it, feel free to check it out.
There we go. Stay Cool. All right. We might go to Ollie next. Ollie, what have you been playing lately?
Oh, well, mine's probably a little... My gaming habits have taken a bit of a dark, sinister turn recently. Oh. So other than Funfair, we played that the other day.
Nice. Yes,
that was fun. So it was Steve, Jules, who else? Can't remember.
Can't remember who else was there. Sorry.
Do you think it was Daylight? Anyway, was it Daylight?
But yeah, that was a good game. I enjoyed that.
Okay.
But my other thing that I'm crazy about right now, very sinister, it's called Unsolved Case Files. So basically they are, you can only play them once. They're basically murder mystery things. So you get like a folder with like an unsolved case file, and it's got all sorts of police interview reports, and you have to figure out how a certain person met their demise or things like that. So it's great.
How does it play? I play things like Chronicles of Crime, where you're using a phone to do it. How does the game actually play along?
So you've just basically got a massive, it's just basically an A4 folder, just full of documents like autopsy reports. You've got police interviews, you've got crime scene photographs, who the victim is, who they were seeing, who their friends were at the time. You have to read everything, and then you have to answer a certain question to unlock the next section of the game.
Mm-hmm.
And it's brilliant. So this one I actually found a big W.
Yeah, right.
Oh, wow.
Yeah. Nice. So if you're listening at home, dash along and grab a copy. But they also sell, I think they've got another four or five cases, but you can only import them from the US at the moment.
Mm.
So, so I've ordered all of those and can't wait. But they're the sort of things, you know, spend a few hours, sort of developing a theory as to how certain things happened, and you go away, think about it, come back.
Yeah. So what's the setting for the ones you've worked through? Are they like medieval, or are they like
1800s? They're modern
days. Modern day. Okay,
yeah.
Cool.
Yeah. Well, 1990s.
Is it like a true crime thing? Like, is it these actual case files?
No, they're fictional. But
yeah, okay, cool.
But they're very well done. They're very genuine looking documents.
Yeah, cool.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you mentioned that you do it, and you sit around and you think about it and come back to it. So is it this? Like, do you sit down for a period of time to dedicate just to playing this game, or is it kind of like something that's just going on until you have this moment where you go, oh, that might be what that's about?
Well, this particular one, you get all the documents in one go. So you just read it through, digest it, and then, you try and think of people's motives, why they would commit the crime. And then you're trying to eliminate people. And a question at the end of the first section might be, disprove why this person wasn't at that location or something like that. Mm. So you've got like a map of the town. And you have to figure out, could they have made it to that location in the time period they said on the police report?
Cool.
So it's great. But, you can only play them once, but then you can gift them, wrap them up and give them to someone for Christmas.
So you're not manipulating the game as such. You just
no.
You know it. You know everything, so there's no point playing it again.
Correct, once it's done, it's done.
If you get if you guess wrong, is it basically like you open up a page and go, yep, I'm wrong, there's the answer, and it's done? Or does it give you a chance to sort of catch up and actually correct your wrong answer?
There's a website, and you type in the answer, and it'll say if it's correct, it goes through to the next page.
Okay, cool.
Or if not, there's hints and things like that.
Yeah.
So,
detective games are so hard to make, I think.
So, yeah,
it would be.
Sounds like they've done it in a really good way. Yeah.
So, like in real life, I'm a big fan of cold case TV shows and things like that.
Yeah, cool.
Right up your alley.
It fits in well with my personality.
Very good.
What was the name of it again, Ollie?
Unsolved Case Files.
Unsolved Case Files, fair enough.
And there's also one called Hunter Killer, and that's a monthly subscription. Also very interesting, working through that at the same time as well. So
very cool.
Nice one. It's funny, when I was a kid, I played so much Where in the World Is Carmen Sandiego. I actually warrant that to my geographical knowledge. Like, I know flags, I know capital cities of countries, all the things you needed to do well in that game. But unless it's a country that wasn't in that game, and then I've got no idea.
It doesn't exist.
Since then, I have every video game or board game that's like a detective game, I've got it, and I've gone, oh, this is great. Oh, it's not Carmen Sandiego, but it's pretty good. And then like about 6 months ago, I got a copy of Carmen Sandiego because they actually have it as an app now.
Oh, wow.
On a device. Oh, yeah. And I'm like, Oh, this is terrible. Everything has surpassed this. But in my mind, it was the top upper echelon, and it had been for years. So this could be another one that it will pique my interest. Because you're right, that Jack, what you're saying, like, it's hard to get right, but when people get it right, man, is there a more immersive and engaging game than a good detective game?
Oh, yeah, yeah. Success relies on remembering these, like, odd facts about flags, then, yeah. I mean, I mean, not internal, is it? Yeah.
All right, so Unsolved Case Files. Did I get that right?
Yes. So the one that's a lot of them are quite hard to find. The first one that's the cheapest as well is Who Murdered Harmony Ashcroft?
So, and you're saying you can grab this just down at Big Dub?
It was at Big W for, I think, $35. Nice. But the other cases are like 50. And you can only get them on direct from their website at the moment.
Yeah, so. That's the dream, getting a game into Big W. Mm.
Yeah.
That's really nice. Good.
Yeah. Right. No, you've succeeded.
One day, hopefully, one day, guys. Hopefully it's the change. The change is upon us. Like, you see a few copies of Pandemic in there now, and I bought Telestrations from Big W recently on a massive sale. So,
we've got a big blitz with our Half Monster games lately, and it's really interesting. Like, the sort of layers and gates you have to go through and stuff, but like, definitely more receptive now than they were like 5 years ago.
That's good.
Being like, oh yeah, like, send us a copy, we'll have a look. You know,
yeah, right. All right. Well, that was Ollie's sizzle. We'll set it down to Jules.
Sinister sizzle, yes.
Sinister sizzle.
All right. Well, I'm going to be talking today about the new hotness, new Stonemaier release. That's Red Rising.
Mm.
So I got my copy on Friday night, and yesterday, we were recording on a Sunday, but yesterday, Saturday, I played 6 solo games of it.
Wow.
Yeah, so I feel like I've taken it through its paces, and I really enjoy it. I think it's a really great game. For those that have played Fantasy Realms, it's very, very similar to that. And I'm pretty sure the rulebook even mentions that a lot of inspiration was taken from that, which makes a lot of sense once you start playing. Mm-hmm. So the idea of the game is you're trying to get the most points, and points you collect are what the cards are in your hand at the end of the game. So you're constantly switching out cards, and all you have to do on your turn is play one card into one of the 4 areas on the board, and then pick up a card from any area that you did not put a card down. That's it. That's all you have to do.
So you're playing the cards face up?
Yep, all face up. Okay. So the card goes face up in an area, and then you can pick up a card from any other area you didn't put that card in. So you can't do the same. You can't put down the card, pick up the card you put down, if that makes sense. So then it all comes down to the abilities on the card. So there's just, I can't even begin to explain all of it, but Fantasy Realms is quite simple in that you have certain combinations. Like, if you have this card with this one, you'll get a bonus 30 points at the end of the game. There is a bit of that in Red Rising, but there's also interplay with the cards when you put them down. So it might go, if you put this on top of a gold card, you can move that to the top of another stack and shift things around. So because, as I mentioned before, you can't pick up from the place you put down. If you move that to another stack, well, then suddenly, yes, you can grab that card. So you're manipulating the cards and where they are on those 4 different zones. Because I guess the other trick is you can only pick up the top card. You can't just pick anything in that zone. So you have to shift and manipulate the positions of those cards if you want to get to something. And at the same time as playing those cards, there's 3 areas you're scoring more points for at the end of the game. There's a track which has a ship. I think it's called the fleet track. And the further you go along that, the more points you get. There's a track, not a track, but an area which you're placing cubes in. I think it's called the Institute. The more cubes you have in there, the more points potentially at the end of the game as well. If you have the most points, you'll get 4 points per cube in there. If you've got the second most, you'll get 2 points for each cube you have in there. Third gets 1 point for each cube. So there's a bit of a domination, or not really an area control, but you're just trying to have the most pieces there. And then the other one is collecting helium. So they're just tokens, little red crystals that you put in front of yourself. So each of those are worth 3 points at the end of the game. So it's a really clever game. It's to take Mitch's phrase, it's Fantasy Realms on steroids. and it's just it's really, really clever. I think the game has a lot of life in it because there's so many cards that can you can interplay with. The way those come out will be different every time. Yeah, I just think it's brilliant. Now, the only negatives I'll touch on is related to what, first of all, the rule book for the solo mode specifically. I had to read a particular section 100 times to understand what it was trying to say. And even then, I go, oh, yeah, I got it. And when I set up the next game, I'm like, wait, how do I do that again? It's just this one card that's really frustrating. And it just, the way it was written was really poor, to be honest. So that was annoying. I probably couldn't even tell you now how you set it up. It's kind of weird. But anyway, that's that one. And the other one was just the box insert. So it's got little circle areas for you to put the metal cubes in for each player. But the way in which it's arranged, as soon as you tip that, everything just falls out. Absolutely everything. You have to keep that thing perfectly flat. Otherwise, everything goes everywhere. So I've had to keep them in their baggies and shove them in those circle dishes for those cubes. So, yeah, a bit of a – that's a bit sucky, to be honest. But apart from that, the game is great. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with the game.
Are you a fan? Are you a fan of the books, Jules? Like, do you go into this game being a fan of the IP beforehand?
I have not even read the books, and honestly, you do not need to. Like, I mean, obviously, there's character names that relate to the book, but it doesn't really matter at all. I fully intend on reading the books because I'd like to know the story because it seems quite interesting to me. So, I hopefully will get my hands on a copy of that book soon. But yeah. It's great.
Oh, yeah. Is it very narrative? Like, do you get a sense of what the story might be, or is it sort of not quite?
Yes. I would say so. So, from what I understand the story, it's about classes. And so, the red is the lowest class. They're the bottom of the run in society. And so, you can definitely tell there's a story in there because the red cards are worth the least amount of points printed on the card, but they have some cool combinations. I wouldn't necessarily say they're the worst cards because if you get a lot of reds together, there's a lot of characters that combo together to get tons of points. And then going all the way up to gold, which is the highest class in that society, they have the most points printed on there. So you can sort of feel like who's lower and higher, and just the artwork is very good at giving that feeling as well. You can sort of see the red are sort of the dirty workers down in the bottom of society. And but then the gold have fancy clothes. And I have to say the collector's edition is nice. The gold cards actually have gold foil on the side. Wow. Really, really nice touch. It looks great. And they're great quality cards. So...
I'm so excited for this. I'm getting my copy tomorrow. I have been reading the books. I've got about 6 or 7 chapters left of the first book, and just hearing you talk about some of the things there, I'm like, ah, oh, cool. That's the Institute. That's Helium 3. Like, you know, it's like this. It's cool. I'm very keen. Very keen to see where some characters are placed in the game and see how much it pulls. This is kind of like the first time I've ever done this, by the way. I'm not much of a reader. And so I'm going into a game knowing the backstory, unless it's from a movie. I really haven't had that before. So it just adds an extra layer. But I've got to say, and you might be interested to hear your thoughts, Jules, the game looks so simple that I don't even know, like maybe not for solo, like you said, but if I was going to play this two-player, I don't even know whether I need to look at the rules.
Oh,
it seems like quite. What's the word I'm looking for? Like, it could just make sense. You know, put a card down here, pick a card up there.
Yeah.
If you put it in this area, one thing will move along. And if you don't like any of the cards, you take one from the middle deck.
Yeah, honestly, playing the game, I don't need to know the rules. It's just the setup for solo specifically because there's a few extra cards. You're right, Steve. It's really, really straightforward. It's put down a card, pick up a card, and just do what the card says. That's all there is to it. So playing solo mode's really simple. All you have to do is flip two cards. It gets two goes to your one, basically. You flip a card, you do what it says, you flip another and repeat that. It's really, really straightforward to do. I have to say it's quite hard to beat, though. So I started on normal, and I just won the first time. I played this a couple more times and got spanked. And then I decided, and I'm going to go up a level. So there's actually six difficulty levels. And two is the normal level. I went up to three, got absolutely spanked the first time. And I just won my last game by 10 points on level three. Basically, all the difficulty is it's quite interesting. In a normal game, you start with five cards and you might get up to seven, maybe eight. It's actually quite difficult to get more cards into your hand because you're always putting one down, picking one up, and there'll be some cards that let you, you know, get an extra card here and there. But the bot actually collects like 20 to 30 cards, but you'll cut down its hand to 20. And the way in which it scores is basically depending on the starting state of the board, it'll either be scoring odd or even cards, meaning the score value in the top left is its primary score value, is either odd or even. And so you go through the deck, you split your odd and even, and you score all of the even if it's the primary way it's scoring, and then you make up the rest to 20 with odd cards. And it scores like 8 points for every even card it has in its hand and maybe 4 points for every odd card. So you start to try and make it pick up the card it's not going to be scoring primarily and manipulating it that way. But that's harder said than done. When it gets two turns in a row to your one, there's been so many moments where I put down a card, I'm like, please don't pick that up. I want to get that back. And it just picks it up. And he's like, ah! Yeah, right.
So is that, I guess that's to negate the fact that the AI can't be trying to combo things up, so it just gets a large amount of cards to score. Is that theory?
Yeah, so it never activates the abilities on the cards. It just scores whether it's an odd or an even card, but it does score on the Fleet Track, the Institute, and Helium. So it will still collect things that way, and it can take, there's like a token, it's not Prestige. Maybe it is. Anyway, there's a token that trades back and forth. Whoever ends the game with it gets an extra 10 points. So it can steal that from you too. But yeah, it's good. I'm looking forward to playing it with more people. But yeah, it's good fun. Really, really easy to teach, and I can't wait to play it some more. Cool.
Very cool. That's Red Rising, Stonemaier Games. It's you mentioned the one of the negatives being the insert.
Mm-hmm.
Well, the good news is that if you didn't get it from the Stonemaier Games pre-order and you got to buy it from your local retailer, there won't be an insert in there, so you don't have to worry about that.
Honestly, I could probably do without it. I mean, the thing is, the nice bit about the collector's edition is all the pieces are metal, the actual player components, so that's really nice. They're well done. And it comes with little, I don't know what you call them, but Scrabble trays just to hold your cards so you don't have to hold them in your hand. I don't know if I'd ever use that. I like holding them in my hand, you know, and thumbing through them and seeing what you got. So, but anyway, the metal's nice, and that's what's cool about it. And the foil on the cards.
Yeah, no doubt I'm keen for this one. There we go. Red Rising from Jules. Next up, we got Jack. Jack, what have you been playing lately?
Well, one game that I really enjoyed, I didn't expect I would, was this game called Two Rooms and a Boom. Like, I played it for the first time. Apparently it was like, so essentially it's where you play it in two actual rooms in your house. Everyone gets a card about whether they're on two teams that they're on, blue or red, and each card also gives you sort of ability that you can do. And it's all related to physical space and sort of checking other people's identities and things like that. And you can lie about your identities, and that's really fun. So I played it with about 20 people, and it was a lot of fun. And every 5 minutes you'd have to sort of have a summit or an exchange of people. So you could, in each room, you would sort of pick who you think was a spy or a traitor or something, and have to send them across to the other space in exchange. Yeah. So, I found that really cool. It wasn't a tabletop game, but it was definitely like a blending between Yeah, I like game. I like the idea of games where the players can, you can walk around a space and sort of be the pieces, if that makes sense, with all the special abilities.
We're just sitting down at a table that everyone can interact in a different way.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. So that was really, that was really cool to do. Because I made some little LARPs and things before. It was great to see how they did it and had this sort of obfuscation gameplay where you're constantly trying to, you just can't trust anyone at any point, and they're actually like lying to your face rather than, doing devious things with cards and meeples on the board. But yeah, so for me, I was just like, this is so cool. I was really excited to talk about it. But yeah, you guys have heard about it.
I've heard about it. Yeah, I haven't played it yet.
Yeah. If you can, give it a go. It's really cool.
Is it like a werewolf scenario where everyone sort of points one person out they all think is wrong, or is it like a voting out sort of thing? How does it work?
You've got the red and the blue teams sort of in one of two rooms in your house. And then, you have to do a prisoner exchange. So each room picks one or more people that they think should be switched over. And those summits get closer and closer. So it starts at like 10 minutes or something, but then it goes to like 5 minutes, 4 minutes, 3 minutes, 2 minutes, 1 minute. And the ultimate goal is for the red team to have like a assassin in the blue team's room to take out the blue team's like president. So Sorry. I should have said that a lot earlier, but I was just like so into the gameplay. I was like, oh, nice. When I play, like I like games where what was really cool about it is that you could just do whatever you wanted to do and sort of pursue your own little lines of inquiry, and it might not get you closer to the goal of like keeping the the assassin out or getting the assassin in, but it all contributed to the dynamic of each group and your play, you know what I mean?
Does it feel a bit like Werewolf or Blood in the Clock Tower sort of thing? Has it got that sort of vibe to it?
Yeah. I've never played Blood in the Clock Tower. I really want to. Because it looks so cool.
Oh, it's good.
At PAX with, they're like, 15, 20 people groups. So awesome. Definitely like Werewolf where you're sort of, there's two groups and you're sort of trading people that you think are the wolves.
Okay, cool. I like that.
Yeah. Like, you have the werewolves and you're trying to like eliminate your own. So, yeah.
All right, cool. Bye.
Okay, so that was Two Rooms at a Boon. A bit of a party theme going on tonight with that. And what was yours again? Sorry, Mike.
Stay cool.
Stay cool.
Stay cool.
We're party people, man. Party people.
Yeah. Well, I actually don't have a sizzle for myself this week because all the games I've played a lot of games in the last few days, but they're all games that I've talked about in the podcast before. I had a great day yesterday. I played a full day of games with my family, which is very rare for me, which is loads of fun. Heaps of One Night Werewolf and Space Base. Sheriff of Nottingham. You know, some really good games there. I probably could have sizzled that, but hey, I haven't given it that much thought, and we got five people on, so it's not like we're going to miss my sizzle for this week. And I got a lot of oats to talk about, so I'll save my chat for then. So that will conclude the sizzling games for the week. Big thanks to everybody, and another big thanks to 2D6 for sponsoring the giveaway of a copy of Whistle Mountain. But with that, we're going to head straight into our topic of the week. Okay, so as mentioned at the top of the show, the topic of the week is the fact that we have two local board game designers with us in Ollie and Jack. So I might throw to Jack first on this one. Jack, not just about your board game design, but just can you give us a bit of a background about you in the board game hobby and how you've come to become a designer?
Oh, yeah, so in 2007, I did a video game design degree. And turned out I wasn't very good at programming, so I did a whole bunch of other things for a while, including working in schools. And I'd learned a lot of sort of design principles for digital games. And then at the schools where I was at for like 5 years, I would turn a lot of their things into little, like work that kids didn't want to do, into little games for them to sort of play, like maths games and things, to make it a bit easier to digest the content. Sort of having done that, and also I always wanted to be a writer, but I wasn't very good at writing, so that's a theme. I'm good at world building, but not necessarily at deciding what the characters should do. And my wife is an English teacher and read one of my stories and was like, I don't know if this is very good, Jack. I'm sorry. And I was like, out of it like you do with the things you do at the school. And I was like, okay, I'll try. And it ended up actually being really cool. So from there, my friend Callan and I, we just made a whole bunch of random little games. Like one was a zine about space and fighting goo monsters. And then we did a Kickstarter for one game. For Animal Empire, and it's just sort of grown from there. And then we did the Trust Me games. Tried Animal World War, and that didn't really go, but yeah, now we're back again with Xenohunters. We also do a few weird things with conventions where we do big 1,000 player mega games that are card-based. Yeah. So I saw a mega game, and I was like, that looks amazing. The Shut Up and Sit Down one.
Yes.
I was like, you know what conventions need? They need like a little bit of that. But of course, you can't have people with like giant dossiers in different countries. So I just made like a 5-card system based on a Pokedex that gave you like guns and like chatting and wealth, and that was the diamonds and stuff like that. And secretly, some of you were trying to hunt down, and some people had bounties on them, and some were bounty hunters secretly. So that's sort of like how I guess I and Half Monster Games fits into the board gaming world at the moment, is just trying to sort of play with the way games work and how they're used and what they mean, and bringing sort of like a tactile element to a lot of these spaces where they might not have been prior, I suppose.
That bounty hunter game wasn't at PAX, was it?
It was at PAX, yeah, 2019.
Was that a bunch of people like doing like cowboy accents and wearing cowboy gear?
That was us.
Oh, I saw you guys.
Did you play?
I did. I was so fresh to board games at the time. I had a weird experience at PAX because I was by myself and just trying to feel my way around. Yeah. I saw people playing King of Tokyo. I had no idea what it was. And I think I might have just got a bit intimidated because I just didn't know what a lot of things were, and I missed out a lot of good opportunities. But as soon as I started talking about it, I'm like, those really energetic cowboy dudes, and they're really in character and trying to get everyone to play this big
with
game.
Little red bandanas and things.
That's the one. I remember that. That was cool.
Definitely play next time. We wanted to come to the Oz Comic Con pop up, but we weren't able to make that, unfortunately. But we'll definitely come to the next ones. particularly PAX this year. So I hope you can join in because it was a lot of fun. But yeah, the way I designed it was sort of just pretending the convention hall was like a giant board game space essentially, and I was how would I want people to interact? If there were pieces on a board, well, you know, they'd like run up behind each other and shoot each other and stuff like that, and exchange gold and things. And that turns out that works really well in a physical space with players acting as if they're game pieces. It's been really, really interesting.
It's such an interesting concept, and it makes me wonder and want to ask you, just jumping this straight away, it just makes me want to ask, like, when you design that, is that a game you somehow sell to somebody? Is that just an experience you just do once? Like, how does that work moving forward from design? How do you distribute it? How does that work? I've never heard of this sort of concept before.
First, what I did was trying to make, where you are the pieces in a board game in your own house. So it was originally just 10 kind of different character types. But then we needed to go to a convention. Or I wanted to go to convention, so I didn't have enough money. And I was like, well, crap, like, how am I going to get in there? So I was like, panels, and like, I was like, maybe I could volunteer and then like half the time have a little stall or something. But then I thought, like, I saw that LARPs had been tried in conventions, but they were sort of like the Vampire the Masquerade kind of LARPs and things like that. But you need like a character sheet, and it's essentially your D&D character. And that's really hard to onboard people onto, unless they're there to specifically play that. So I thought, well, why not just sort of take this system that we've developed for like houses and parties that just gives you a very quick character, like you get 5 cards, bam, like you're done, you're ready to play a LARP, you don't have to set up a lot of stuff, which is really entertaining, but not everyone sort of has the time to do that. I was like, why not try and apply that to a convention? And so we did a few trials at Supernova and Oz Comic Con in Brisbane. And they went really well, and it just sort of spread by word of mouth. And we, because we were doing this, we sort of counted as a community group or fan club or something
Right.
And I essentially just pitched it to the people that were organizing and running the conventions. And they were like, yeah, all right, come in, set up your things, go for it. And like, we've also obviously got like games to sell. And so that was sort of the exchange, was like, we can have a table with, you know, all of our stuff on it, and we'll also be crazy cowboys and like contribute and add to the, to like the energy and having a sort of thing running in the background of the convention, that just sort of adds to it. And yeah, like the ultimate goal is to develop it into like a big box product, that conventions all around the world can buy, and it's all in there. And to the point where it's weird if you don't have like a half monster convention mega game.
That would be awesome.
People are like, what's it going to be, guys? Like, you know, PAX East. And they're like, what? Yeah. And so, and I want to have different themes. So at the, so there's all the themes, you know, like Cthulian and like mystery and detectives and like murder and medieval stuff. And yeah, I'm testing it at the Abbey Medieval Festival in June or July in Brisbane. So if you happen to be up here, please come along and sort of help us test it out. But yeah.
I just want to
see this there's this podcast that's about board game barbecues or something that might be having a convention towards the end of the year.
Yes.
Well, guys, I mean, if you're keen, it would be weird without it. So that's what people are saying.
Is that what it says on the box? A convention would be weird without this. Jack Morgan.
I just wanted to say, for anyone that doesn't know what a mega game is, and it was referenced, Jack referenced it before. So just Google Shut Up and Sit Down, Watch the Skies. And it, there's two videos to it. It is hilarious. Like, I'm very excited to give your game a go, Jack. Like, that, I want to do a mega game after watching what Shut Up and Sit Down did. And it's just incredible.
That's cool.
Oh, good, man. Yeah, I think we actually, I did a panel on it with the leaders of the mega game groups around Australia from Sydney, Melbourne, Adelaide, and something like that, about like mega games and how you can apply them to different scenarios. So yeah, you might be able to look that up as well, but there's probably a mega game group in where you live, Jules. Are you in Brisbane or are you
I'm in Canberra.
I imagine there's a mega game kind of group there.
Ah, cool.
We'll get together and recreate Watch the Skies or
that'd be so fun.
Other ones. Yeah, it's a really, really cool space, I think. And yeah, I definitely go with like the lower fidelity, more zany, wacky Western antics kind of route. But yeah, like the that English Watch the Skies thing, it just looks so complex and so cool.
Yeah,
like Ollie was talking about before, like a big kind of detective kind of mission. But the players are like doing things and seeding clues and like getting intel on each other, and yeah, it's a lot of fun. I'm glad. Yeah, definitely give it a go, Jules, if you can.
Totally.
Well, speaking of Ollie, we haven't heard from Ollie for a while.
No, I've been listening with great enthusiasm.
So, Ollie, last time you were on our podcast, it was about a game called Matchbox Empires that you were looking at eventually sort of progressing along and getting it kickstarted. Whereabouts are you on that process? How's that going?
All right. So I would say my biggest enemy at the moment is lack of time. just to develop the board game actually didn't take that long at all. Like, I'm probably talking a month, but all the polish, the refinements, the prototypes, all the testing, all that sort of stuff just takes so long. I'm talking thousands of hours probably. And so I find to spend time on it, I need a good amount of time. I can't just do 2 hours here and there. I need like a good old weekend. Now I have adult things to do, like mow lawns and, you know, washing, and I'm kidding. I always did those things. not a mummy's boy. But yeah, just working is hard.
Yeah.
Anyway, I digress. So Where are we now? So I reckon we're actually getting into a good position. So behind Mike, I can see a copy of it on the shelf.
Yes, that's correct. To the left.
So I think I'm at a position where I'm happy with it. I've been uploading loads of pictures to Instagram and getting loads of good feedback, taking it to PAX, loads of good feedback. And I've been creating the promo video and the Kickstarter page over the last couple of weeks. Awesome. And I've got it all quoted for manufacture. Mm-hmm. And I'm hoping to launch in around June time, I would think.
So, nice. And to those who may not have been listening to our podcast since episode 20, do you want to give us a bit of an explanation of what Matchbox Empires is?
Okay, I won't give an elevator pitch. I'll just explain the game in terms of function. So it's kind of similar to Civilization, the video game. So you've got like a 9x6 terrain board. Each player gets one. And it's populated with face-down tiles. They're all black on the back, so it's like a fog of war. And those tiles have all got different resources on, like grass or mountains and gold deposits, all those kind of things. And you use these little three hero characters that you control, and you move them around the board to uncover those tiles. And then you build a city, you build mines and lumber yards and all those kind of things. Civilian infrastructure, military infrastructure, and then eventually you take a fight to the other player. So it's not like a score track or anything. It's just a build a city, build a good resource engine, and then annihilate your friends. So, yeah.
Fair enough. So I'll jump back one step because one question I didn't ask you that I asked Jack and I ask all of our guests is, besides Matchbox Empires, what's your role in the board game hobby? How did you get to designing your own board game?
This is the first, yep. So when I was a kid, I absolutely loved board games. One to note would be HeroQuest and Key to the Kingdom, which I think Connor reminded me of the other day. And I was like, I remember that game, the little whirlpool things. Yeah, so I love that. And then probably in my teens, I migrated to video games. I always loved playing video games. Now, I mean, when I got to my 30s, I wanted to look for a way to unplug and become more sociable. And I was just in the city one day and I came across a copy of Mansions of Madness, first edition. And I loved all the artwork, just so more developed than they were when I was a kid. Like, it's grown up big time. Just a little bit. And then there's like board game shops and you can buy like tons and tons of games. Then I go home, I watch Shut Up and Sit Down. My favorite show that I wrote down, my favorite episode of a show would be Before the Board Game Barbecue, of course, came along.
Thank you.
Yes, that'd be I used to love Geek and Sundry with Will Wheaton.
Yeah, yep.
I think there's been some kind of conflict and they're not doing it anymore, but and Becca's got to taken over. But yeah, the episode Dead of Winter with Ash Johnson and Grant Imahara. That's one of my favorite all-time episodes. And I'd just be sucking it up. What can I buy next? And then I've always been quite a creative person. And then I started thinking of my own ideas. And then that's when Matchbox was born. I've been working on that for probably just over 4 years now. And I've got tons more ideas in my head that are bursting to come out. And so I need to get this one done and out of the way so that the next one could come out.
And there's lots of the game. You mentioned before, did you say you came up with the idea in about a month or something? Did you mention?
Yeah. So I came up with it when I was playing Dead of Winter. It's got nothing to do with Dead of Winter. Just my brain made this weird connection somehow and came up with a completely different concept. So I think it was to do with the way the standees work, all the zombies and things like that. I thought, oh, that'd look good if they were it was a city. It looked all 3D. Mm. So, and I used to love playing Sim City, Civilization. Yeah. So I'm like, I could do a game like that. And I'm surprised no one else has thought of it yet that I know of. Mike, I don't know if you've ever played anything similar.
Well, it definitely comes through in your game. So when I spoke to Dan, Dan passed it over to me to give a try. And I think he first mentioned to me, because I didn't know what it was, and he first mentioned to me that it was kind of like SimCity. And my partner loves SimCity. She loves that sort of build and get resources. So I thought it was right up her alley. Took me a little while to get around to it with life being the way it is. And I reached out to you about a week or so ago and actually got it to the table. And, yeah, we really had a good time. So, you know, there's all these resources you're collecting and your heroes move around and one hero can climb mountains and the other ones can't. And when I first started, I'm like, well, why does it really matter? Until I made a row of mountains accidentally that went across my board and all my people would have to go around it unless one of my characters was on top of a mountain to help the other guys across. I'm like, okay, it's all starting to make sense. And, you know, it's a bit of a race because you've got three governors on the table and the first one to build their town hall first gets their governor first. And then you sort of keep going. And it's funny that as soon as someone builds, I think the first sort of thing you want to build at military wise is a munitions factory. It's like, I'm getting ready. And then as soon as I built one, she was like, I need to build one of those too. And then I'm going to build this attack and I'm going to build this attack. And it just all escalates from there, you know? So it quickly changes from like a really cutesy, not cutesy. It's got a lot of moving parts to it, but it becomes this just resource collection. And I need to build a warehouse to collect more resources and do this and do this and do this to being, well, now I'm building this missile and I'm building a radar to be able to re-roll dice. And it just has a lot of moving. The fighting section made me think a little bit of Galaxy Trucker. You sort of roll dice and that sort of gives you like a longitude and latitude of where you're attacking and things like that. So no, it's a lot of fun. And as soon as you said it took you about a month at first, I'm like, well, how? Because there's so many moving bits to sort of work out there. So there's a lot to it. And for that to be your first game, you know, you didn't work your way up slow with like little games first, you sort of went the whole hog. It's a good 2 hour game. It's not, it's not a short game at all.
We were actually playing it last night, me, Dan, and Dennis, a guy called Dennis. We were up till 1:30. We had a good time. Oh, wow. So all the buildings, they have like upon destroy condition. So if a building gets hit, it can cause a chain reaction. So when you build your city, you have to make sure your buildings are strategically placed. But do you spend the extra time it takes to place them versus scrambling to the military and the attacking the other player? So, yeah.
Hey there, it's Steve from the editing room floor. As you've probably heard in the last couple of weeks, we've had some technical issues and they aren't going away, unfortunately, which means for the rest of the episode, we had to switch to an alternative for the audio. And there's no doubt that the quality isn't as good as usual. So I do apologize, but it was the best we can do with what we had. So without further ado, here is the rest of the show.
So this game of building stuff and blowing and crashing and destroying stuff totally sounds like a game that I would absolutely love.
Oh, yeah. Oh, it's on Tabletop Simulator, so if you're ever free one evening, come along.
Yes, keen to smash stuff.
Yep, fulfill your wish. Gladly. You can smash my city up just like Dan did last night.
Beautiful.
I played a lot of SimCity when I was a kid too. I'm giving away that I used to own an Amiga 500 with Carmen Sandiego and SimCity. I got really annoyed because SimCity had this thing where if you were doing really well, suddenly a monster would just come and start attacking. Is there any monsters in this game?
What? Not yet.
Expansion.
Yeah, expansion pack. Yeah. Let me get my pen. 2 seconds.
I want to be credited for that.
Call the monster Steve.
Yeah. Oh, there you go. Yeah.
Very good.
I could do a promo piece for Kickstarter.
Yeah. Ooh,
a big like Steve Chivers monster or something.
Chivo the monster.
Instant funding.
I mean,
like Rampage, you know, smashing buildings.
Look, you know, if I was ever going to be depicted as a character in a game, I think a scary monster, an ugly, scary monster, it sounds like a bit right. That's awesome. All right, now, before we move on to other things, I wanted to just quickly go back to you, Jack, because I know we talked a bit about the games that you've done. But I also wanted to talk, you did something really cool in a school recently that we shared on our Facebook page, where you went in and spoke to a whole bunch, was it primary school kids or secondary school kids?
Yeah, it was in a secondary class where they were doing this really awesome, like, it was like a form room kind of activity, you know, like when you get to the end of the week and the end of the day and the kids can choose like a different little kind of creative subject that they want to do. And yeah, this was for board games. So I went in at the start of the term and was like, hey guys, like this is sort of how I design games. Here's how you can make a game about, I don't know, like the Avengers or something just really quickly and do it in 10 weeks. Or really 10 hours, I guess, because they only had an hour each week over the term. And then, yeah, went back a couple of times and then for a final presentation for them making the games. And yeah, they did some really, really cool stuff, actually. One guy made this, one of the students made, it was like a full-on RPG, like, world simulation. He'd obviously gone home and just gone into that mode where you just make a game.
That's cool.
Yeah, and he'd bring it along every week and then release changes, and all of his friends were really into it and would like play it, like genuinely play it.
That's fantastic.
Yeah, and he had like a deck of cards. It was really cool. But they all made something really awesome. All the way from little games, it was sort of a bit like Uno, with very clear inspiration to things, that were, I was just like, wow, like where do you even get this idea? It was a lot of fun. And I'm doing a master's at the moment at the Queensland University of Technology on how games can be used for education, particularly about like science and data science.
Ooh, nice.
That's cool.
I'm not a mathematician or a statistician, but so I do the game design part of that research.
Yeah.
It really, really studies show that, it can help you understand a topic really deeply in a way, because you're manipulating the like elements of that kind of concept.
That's really interesting. So for me, my background, I did environmental science, and there's a whole bunch of stuff that since getting into the hobby more seriously, I've thought, man, that would be cool as a board game. I work a lot in the waste industry, so dealing with recycling. And there's definitely not a game about that. And every time I talk to people about recycling, there's so much they don't know. It's actually incredibly complex, and the markets behind it, it's just really fascinating. And I have toyed with the idea of doing it, but I mean, I've got the industry knowledge, and if you're good at designing games, maybe something can happen here.
Collaboration.
A game about recycling, just like, how the heck do you recycle? Where does everything go? What goes in the bin and what doesn't? That would be perfect.
Yep. But
I literally, I think like the government would be into that, into funding that, to just be like, how do you get the knowledge out there? Because it's not working 100% right now. I mean, a lot of pizza boxes with cheese in them.
That's right. That's essentially a lot of my role at work is educating people and designing education campaigns and doing research on waste education and stuff. So gamifying that would be cool.
Let's do it. I
could just see, if it's a Jules created game though, there'll be a card that says grab your opponent and throw them in the recycling.
That's what I was thinking.
Oh yeah. One of the cards you have to sword could be like a human foot and you're like,
that's great.
There has to be a take that in the game, definitely.
Jack, you and I were talking not too long ago about another game that you've worked on, which is on in that vein, which is a virtual reef diver game.
About marine science.
And it just, what I loved about it, like when I look at it and I go, if this was in schools, kids would do this. And that's kind of like what you were talking about. You're sort of gamifying this knowledge that they might not necessarily be that keen to take in otherwise. And it had that really cool mechanic where it's basically a game where you've got these cards and you have to identify them. So you say, oh, that's a fish. And if you say that and it is a fish, you get a point. But if you're able to say what kind of fish it is and what habitat it lives in and all that, you might get 5 points. So it kind of intrinsically motivates you to learn more about these
That's cool.
things so that you can do better in the game. And I thought if that was in a, if that was in a, like a, maybe a year three, year four science class, the kids would be all over that. They'd love that.
That's actually why we've been testing it. And in the national curriculum currently, there's a marine science and data science, sort of like learning how to, you know, do tallies and rough regressions and stuff. And they, we've tested it in the classrooms and they really enjoy it. Because it's an educational game, there's obviously a skew towards, you know, there's a balance of fun and like utility, if that makes sense. The thing, like, it, you know, it is to try and help people retain knowledge. A lot of educational games currently tend to be reskins of things like Monopoly or, you know, Uno and stuff. And they don't have any like actual, in the function of playing, it's nothing like the science that you're trying to represent. You know, there's nothing about like buying houses around the edge of a board that's like, you know, nuclear science or something like that. unless it's a big stretch. But yeah. The research that I'm doing is showing that games that are deliberately created to give insight into the mechanical function of the science do help kids, people of all ages, actually, to learn how it actually works, which is really exciting because I think it opens up a whole vein of, Jules, you're talking about doing an educational game about recycling, like it would work.
Absolutely.
And there's empirical data out there that proves that. And for, you know, for game designers and things like that, this is, I'm just very excited because it's like this whole field that's like the Wild West, like frontier, where it's all coming together, and there's a lot of interest in can it work. Yes, and so I think there's lots of opportunities there. Sorry, absolutely. That was a big rant, but
that's good.
Finishing my master's thesis at the moment, so I can I've got the working in my head. Sorry.
Nice.
I have to ask, so going from games that I know you from, you know, when I sort of jumped on into knowing your sort of style was Trust Me I'm a Doctor or Trust Me I'm a Superhero. And now I'm hearing about, you know, educational games and amazing as well. And then I want to know where Xenohunters comes into. You know, that's a totally in between the two.
Yeah, well, one of the sort of guiding principles I've had is it's kind of lame, but it's like the rule of cool. Like, I really like just following whatever, like, I think would be awesome to do at the time, I guess, and then doing like 10 of those, and then whichever ones survive, like other people being like, yeah, that sounds interesting, or you know, it survives testing, and then like the manufacturing process, like, can I get a quote? Is that achievable in terms of a crowdfunding campaign and stuff like that? So it's sort of like Darwinian game design in the sense that, like, I mean, Ollie, you're coming, you've got like so many ideas and stuff. And when you start turning them all into prototypes and deciding which one to do next, it can just be a process of what ideas survive all of those like gates that you go through into making an actual practical product. Mike, I think that's just, if it's sort of a weird spread of games, it's just because I'm just making the ones that sort of people
that's cool, like. Man. That works.
Yeah. And with the education ones, it's interesting because it's not necessarily always about the opinion of the sort of board gaming public, if that makes sense. Like, because in an academic institution, there's like, it took me 2 years to make that game, and it would have only taken 6 if it was in like private industry. But it took 2 years because every time I did like a prototype or took it to the next stage, it had to go through a review round through all these different departments, like mathematics, education, and creative industries. And they all wanted changes, and it was just, it was just really interesting. There are a lot of chefs in the kitchen, and which was fun. Like, I do enjoy collaborating, and it was really good. But universities are part of the magic is that there's so much opportunity for collaboration. But part of the that can slow it down a little bit is that, you know, people might not be available for another 2 weeks or something to give feedback and things like that. Whereas if you're making a game creatively in the private industry, it's, you can just be like, I like this, so I'll do that.
Yeah.
Like, people said they hate that feature, so it's gone.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, you never know, Jack. One day, us humans are going to be traversing the stars, and who knows, maybe Xena Hunters will become an educational game somehow, you know?
That's it. Yeah.
Yeah.
It's
on like Mars.
The Nostradamus of board games.
That's it.
Hopefully the medicine one doesn't come true. That would
be, yeah. That'd be quite the regression.
Please stay out of my erectum with just all of those implements, please, Doctor.
Just need to fix someone with, what is it? Disagreeableness, I think is one of the cards.
Yeah. Disagreeableness. Some of that. Criminality, that was my favorite.
I like that.
Well, before we move on, I just Ollie, I want to pick your brain a little bit because you mentioned that you've got some other things that are just sitting there waiting.
In my head?
Yeah. Can you divulge anything? Can we get a scoop is what I'm asking. Mm-hmm.
They're all very different, I'll tell you that much. I don't want to say in case they get stolen.
Fair.
Yeah.
Yeah. No, sorry, Steve.
He's playing hardball.
Yeah, that's right.
You got to come back on the barbecue when it comes up, mate. That's
what we need. Maybe you should do the Stonemaier thing and just say it's Codename Sam.
Oh, yeah, Codename.
Codename. Yeah.
Yeah, that's a good idea, huh?
Works for him.
If you buy me a beer, I might start talking. We'll see.
Yeah, fair call. Yeah.
Your old fashioned spy work.
Yeah. Yes.
Burn in the shoe. Bug the apartment.
Anything in Trust Me, I'm a Doctor that'll get me to talk. That's
oh, many
plenty.
Opium. Whatever you need, Ollie. Really.
Bone sore.
I did find that cool. I did find that very cool. And Trust Me, I'm a Doctor. They're actual real things. Like,
yeah,
they're real.
It is disgusting. I had to take a lot of breaks while designing that game. Oh, why are they doing this to people? I'm actually playing, like, okay, I can look at more like medieval art of people using blacksmith tools in various places.
Oh,
yeah, because like the original Doctors were. Like they're called barber surgeons because they were just barbers that were like, I can get things off, or I can, you know, and the blacksmith pull people's teeth out, and it's just because they had the implements and medicine was just not a thing.
Cool.
Yeah. Although I guess they had a lot of, you'd have like, shamans and wise women and things like that would have herbal remedies and things, but the idea of using implements to fix your body was a was a bit later and was really where it all went wrong, I think, in my opinion. For a little while.
My hand hurts. Well, if you don't have the hand anymore, it won't hurt.
Yeah, that's right.
Sure, you would be very problem solved. As a doctor, I would trust you.
Thank you.
All right, well, we'll finish up the topic there. Thank you very much for Ollie and Jack for sharing all that information. That was awesome. I hope everyone enjoyed that. I certainly did. But we'll move on from our topic and we'll head to the awards. Okay, so at the end of April, we'll be celebrating the first annual Board Game Barbecue Awards. I know April might seem a little bit late, but if it's good enough for the Oscars, it's good enough for us. And just like the Oscars, the 2020 Board Game Barbecue Awards are going to be a star-studded extravaganza because it's going to be hosted at the Board Game Barbecue Retreat, which will be the first time all nine of the Board Game Barbecue podcasters will be together ever. So here's how it works. We've got nine categories, and the nominations are open currently for these nine categories, which are kids, Best Kids Game, Family Game, Party Game, Light, Medium, or Heavy Game, Best Artwork, Best Expansion, and Game of the Year. So, yes, this is these are all of the years. So that year is 2020. And it's important to say that even though sometimes it's incorrect, we are going by what BGG says 2020 is. So Isle of Cats is not included, even though everybody knows that game didn't get released until 2020. BGG has it on 2019 for some stupid reason. That's just, we just got to... Otherwise, it gets way too subjective, so we're just going to have to call it as it lies and say we're basing it on the BGG years. Now, anyone in the community is allowed to nominate in the game in any category you want. So you don't have to do all nine, but you can if you wish. If you're not sure how to look up games on BGG that were released in 2020, you just go to Advanced Search, and then you just put the sort by year of publication, and you just go 2020 to 2020, and it'll only show you those games. If you'd like to vote, you just got to head to our socials, make a copy of the nomination form, fill it out and post it back up. on those pages, and those, your votes will be counted. The more games that get, more times a game gets nominated, the better chance it has of winning. And the nominations close on Monday, March 22nd. So this isn't to decide what the winner is. This is to decide which five games will make the five nominees for the awards. And then it's over to our esteemed panel of judges, which is the nine podcast hosts, plus all of our Patreon supporters. So if you're a Patreon supporter, you get to have your say in which game gets across the line. It's just another perk for being a Patreon. So if that interests you and you really want to be a part of this, feel free to go to our Patreon and search for the Board Game Barbecue on patreon.com or look for the link in the show notes. But I don't want to spend too much time telling everyone to spend money on us, so I'll carry on. Once we've collated those, the winners will be announced on the same weekend as the Oscars in a special award night episode. So it's time to get voting if you haven't already. Ah, right. So I got through that. Now,
that was real good.
Now we're going to talk about three particular categories. So last episode we did medium, light, medium and heavy games. And this week we're doing kids, family and party games. So before we get started on this too, it's worth noting that we're not using BGG specific categories for this, so it doesn't have to be listed as a kids game on BGG in order to be qualify. If it's just a good game to play with kids, you can vote for it. And if your kids play On Mars, then good for you. You can put On Mars in as a kids game. That's totally fine. I don't know. I don't like its chances.
Might not. Yeah, we won't get far.
Just before we get into like what we all think is a good kids, family, or party game, I will let you know that some of the nominations that have come through already, Zombie Teens, this is for kids. So Zombie Teens Evolution, Mariposas, King of Tokyo Dark Edition, Control, Tiny Epic Dinosaurs, plenty more. And then in family games, Holy Festival of Colors, which I actually put down for my artwork, just quietly. Trek in the World, Divvy Dice, Coaddle, Fort, Marvel United, Loot of Lima, and plenty more as well. And then in party games, Blood on the Clock Tower, Truffle Shuffle, Crosswords, and some others as well. So we'll just quickly go around the table. If you've got, one, it doesn't have to be one for each category, but if you may have that, games that stand out for you in these categories. What have you got, Jules?
So for kids games, nothing. I don't have kids and I'm not opposed to kids games. I'd play with kids, cool kids games as well, but you know, just never really had the opportunity. So that's cool. Family games, the one that stood out in the list that you read off actually was Fort. I really enjoy that. I've never played it in a family setting, I would say, with younger people. It might be a little bit beyond what they can do, but still, maybe I'm wrong. Like I said, there could be kids out there playing On Mars. So yeah. Fort, I think, is a really strong game and good contender. In terms of party game, I'd go with Blood on the Clock Tower. I've had so much fun playing that a few times in the Discord community. It's a really, really solid game. I've played Werewolf for years and years and years. And when this came along, bye-bye Werewolf. Like, Blood on the Clock Tower all the way.
What about yourself, Holly? Do you have any standouts in these categories?
The only one I've heard of that you just read out was Fort and Blood on the Clock Tower. I don't have kids either. I've got a cat. But it's not very good at playing games. It stops me playing games, or it'll do like a Godzilla thing and walk across the board. Don't know any. So yeah, Blood on the Clock Tower. I haven't actually played it, but I spectated on one of your games. It looked very good. And I think we should be getting our copy soon because I backed it on Kickstarter.
One day.
I think, it's almost been 2 years now.
It's been a while.
Well, these are Aussie designers as well, I'm pretty sure.
Yeah, Aussie they're involved, for sure.
But it's looking good, so I can't wait to see it. So.
Fair enough.
And try it.
What about you, Mike?
Oh, Isle of Cats for sure.
You might also notice that I didn't mention Don't Get Got because I found out that that's down as a 2018 game.
It hurts, doesn't it?
Oh, gosh.
For best kids game, I'm the one that put down King of Tokyo Dark Edition. I haven't actually played it with kids yet, but I'm really looking forward to it. Because I haven't played a lot of games with kids outside like Cockroach Poker, I don't think it's 2020 though.
No, it's not.
But I sort of get intimidated about putting a kid off board games by showing them something too complicated.
Yeah,
but
sure.
I have to give it a go soon because I just think those big chunky dice getting rolled and punching all the monsters, I think that's going to be a great, great kids game. For family game, I put down Marvel United. From what I understand, just playing with the family, working together, it's max four player, which is the iffy part, but I've been playing a bunch of that game lately and it is fantastic. I've absolutely been loving Marvel United, and I'm gonna second Jules and Ollie on Blood in the Clock Tower for party game. Like that thing, that's an amazing experience. Just gets everyone chatting, and you know, just like Two Rooms and a Boom that was talked about before. I love that feeling of everyone, you know, accusing each other and having a bluff and lie and working their way through everything. So those were my submissions.
Oh, sorry, I have to interrupt because as you've been talking, I've been scrolling through BGG looking at the 2020 releases, and I didn't realize that Moonrakers was actually 2020. For some reason, I had in my mind it was 2019. I would put that up for a family game.
Okay.
It's really simple, lots of negotiation, which families love, and it's solid. I'll be sizzling that in the near future as well, so just throwing it out there.
Cool.
Fair enough. I'm going to go to our resident expert on party and, I guess, family games to an extent. Definitely party games, though. Jack, what have you got in these areas? Because I've got a feeling...
I feel so bad and like I'm neglecting the that title and the crown. But yeah, I haven't had a chance to play very many of the games that I'm not personally designing and working on at the moment. So yeah, I'm sorry. I am going to go through and sort of submit a few, and I've got a couple of game days coming up that I will be able to try a whole bunch. But yeah, for now, I'm so sorry. I'm going to have to leave that pending and update them in a little
bit. I didn't trust
I was just throwing you a bone, man. No, I was talking about... Trust me, I'm a superhero, man. Like, come on.
Throw you a nominations.
I have the romance stuff in, but yeah.
Well, I don't know. Is that a 2021 game or?
It was kickstarted last year, so yeah, maybe it'll pop up. I'll let you guys decide, but yeah.
Well, the ones I voted for, mine were a bit tricky because kids' games, like. The games that I'm playing with my kids now, my kids have been gaming for a while, so it's not like your entry-level Harbour-style games that they play. So I'm like, well, what's a game from 2020? Because I played a load of games with my kids, but maybe not from 2020 so much. And the one game that stood out for me, which is a game that my seven-year-old could understand and enjoyed, in fact, he was six when we started it, and that was he enjoyed the fact that he could draw all over the board, and that was My City. So My City is... I got to be honest, I don't particularly love it, but my kids did because that you could. It starts off, does that real slow, gradual release thing. So the first round of that game is a really simple polyomino placement game where there's like one rule that you've got to follow, and the rest of it is just fill your board up as best you can kind of thing. And then the next time you put a sticker on your board, and then that changes the rules slightly. So, and then the next time you do something else, and that changes the rules slightly. So as you go along, you're playing this far more advanced game than what you started, but because it's so gradual, the kids can actually keep going with that. And so it might not look like a great kids game, probably doesn't jump out at kids, but I think it's an experience that kids can definitely enjoy once they realize that, oh, wait, I'm putting stickers on this and I'm writing my name on the actual physical board. Like, this is mine now. It's not just something we put in the box and someone else plays it the next day, you know? So I thought that went well for my kids. So that gets my vote. And then for family games, I chose a game called Santa Monica. Santa Monica is just a beautiful game. There's not a lot. It's very much like simplistic in its art form, which actually makes it beautiful. It's and the idea of the game is quite simple. You're basically building a pier and a beachfront. And it's a bit like, I think it's a bit like Villages, Jules, that you've played a bit where you place a card, and depending on what's on that card, you want your people that are on the beach to go there to get certain benefits. And then if you build, you know, it might give you a special card that says if you build 5 of these along your waterfront, then you'll get a bonus. Or and you've got right. there's this particular way you move along, and you know, there's beach volleyball games, maybe you need to go to 5 beach volleyball setups or whatever else, you know, lots of different things, sort of ways to build it out. And it's just a load of fun. It's really nice. I actually think it didn't get as much buzz last year than it as it deserved, because it came out in like February and then the pandemic happened, and it's kind of just didn't get talked about. It's a game you can't really solo. Yeah. I reckon maybe you could solo it. Yeah, anyway, so Santa Monica, beautiful little game made by AEG. They didn't do much wrong. And then for party game, again, a bit of Blood of the Clock Tower for sure is a great choice. But I am a little bit hesitant to choose it, only to the fact that the only way you can play it is at the moment is, you know, if someone runs a online thing for you, it's you don't can't actually have the physical thing. So for that reason, I was the one who put up Truffle Shuffle, which is a 6-player game at its max. It's made by the same people who made Point Salad, and it's very similar. It's very easy to get out. It's a quick game. It plays fast. I mean, it's hard to say it's an out and out party game, but what it is when you've got a lot of people in a room and you in a game and you want to just get some quick games going to keep people entertained and having a good time, it's a simple game to pull out and put on the table. So yeah, I don't know whether, aside of Santa Monica, I don't know whether I've actually nominated a kids game at all. And I don't know whether I've actually nominated a party game at all, but that's what I've done. So it probably just means they won't get through and they won't be one of the nominations, which I'm fine with. So yeah, that's as simple as it is, guys. You literally just have to enter in all the ones that you've chosen. Next episode, we're going to cover, I guess you would call, the big three, which is best artwork, best expansion, and game of the year.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. Any hints, Ollie and Jack, seeing is that you won't be on the next one, what your what that would be for you for 2020?
You got them stumped.
Yeah. Well, questions without notice, it always happens, doesn't it?
Yeah, without notice.
I can remember the box art of this really beautiful looking game, but I just cannot for the life of me remember the name of it. Ugh. You know when that happened?
Yeah.
But yeah, what I'll do, I'll look it up and I'll nominate it on the page, because it's the Board Game Barbecue Community group.
That's the one.
On
the
one.
Yep, Board Game Barbecue Community.
Facebook
page. I'll have to get back to you.
Yeah, fair call. You're right though, Jack. It was I actually had Dwellings of Eldervale down for best artwork, and then as I'd finished typing that at my desk, I got up. I don't know if you can see it in the background if I move my mic. Holy Festival of Colors is the last game I see before I walk out of my garage door, and I've walked past. I've gone, oh, hang on, that artwork's bloody amazing. I'm going to go back and change my vote. So. Anyway, so if you want to be part of this, the people listening, all you have to do is do exactly what Jack said. Go to our Board Game Barbecue Community group and find the post, copy, paste with your answers. And that's as simple as it is. And hang around. We'll mention the nominees on March 22nd. And then we'll have the final ceremony at the end of April in a huge extravaganza. But with that, we're going to head to our final segment of the show, which is Swearing an Oath. So Swear an Oath is brought to you by Advent Games, another fantastic sponsor of ours. Advent have a great online store and a great board gaming presence in Sydney. Their store has an amazing array of categories on their website. So if you like a particular style of game, it's a great place to find other games you may not have heard of in that same vein. But it's also a great place to see what's coming soon, or you know, what's up to pre-order and what's just new and hit the shelves. Dean does a great job getting stock pretty quickly and getting loads of it. So it's a pretty good place to go if you're looking for something that's hard to get elsewhere. So, and if you can't find it, you can always get in touch with him and he'll make sure that you go on the list to get it in when it comes in. So check out adventgames.com.au for that. But with that, we'll go to our O's, and I might actually keep talking because I can stop and not say anything for the rest of the episode. I had a couple of O's. I had Whistle Mountain and Under Falling Skies, and I'm happy to report I've got them both done. And
nice.
I did Under Falling Skies first, and that's I don't know about. I know Mike's played it. I think that rule book is terrible. I don't know about you.
I had a couple issues.
Yeah, because I'm sitting there, I'm reading through it, and it was like late at night. I'm like, oh, maybe I'm just not understanding it. I'll come back at it next morning. And then I came back and I went, oh, okay. And then I started playing. I'm like, this is so much easier than you made it sound. Yeah. Like roll dice, put them here, do this, move that.
Yeah.
Like, it just seemed so simple. I'm like, wow, you really tried to complicate it. I don't know. That's how I felt anyway. But aside of the fact that the rule book I didn't love, I thought the game was really cool and I thoroughly enjoyed it. And I won my first mission by literally one square. If I didn't finish on that particular go, then I would have lost the game on the next turn because I had three ships one square away from my city and I had no health left. So it would have killed me. But then the second time I played it, you know, if you're not sure how the word, it's like Space Invaders. So these ships are coming down to attack your city, gradually coming down. And whatever dice roll you roll that you allocate to that row is how far the ship moves down. So I had a ship in the far left column and I rolled and I didn't pay much attention to what I'd done because I'd rolled, I think, move five. And on the fifth space is an arrow pointing to the next column. So then when I did the next dice, it also moved down, and then it hit another arrow. So in one turn, it went from the top to like two in front of my city, and I was on the back foot from that point on. So, really cool game, just very simple. Maybe watch a review, maybe watch a how I play rather than read the rule book would be my tip. And then Whistle Mountain. I won't talk about Whistle Mountain that much because I can tell you right now, it will eventually be a sizzle. It's a really fun game. It's made by Scott Caputo and Luke Laurie. Luke Laurie makes Dwellings of Eldervale, and you've all heard me talk about how great that game is. It does share a similarity from Dwellings with the way that you use your workers. You put them out to do one thing and you pull them back to do another thing, which is common. But just that idea that you're building this scaffolding and you can only put buildings on top of the scaffolding, so you need to... You can't cover any spaces without it. So you've got to make sure you get the groundwork done first before you can build these buildings. And then you kind of place your workers or your ships and you allocate, you can get whatever is surrounding it. So you can, it really comes down to an intricate way to place them on the board. Really cool. And then if you go too high, the water starts coming and sinking your workers. And just a lot of fun. Whistle Mountain, check it out. I'll talk about it more on a later episode for sure. Which leaves me done. I'm clean. I've got nothing. Ooh, so
nice one.
Wash your hands.
What's next, Steve? Yeah. What's next?
And that is a simple question to answer, Mike. I don't know if there's been a simple question to answer as my son just comes in, this pop in screen. Hey, bud. I don't know if you heard earlier, but if you listen back, I'll make it a competition. Comment in the post of this show what my son said when he walked in unannounced halfway through the episode earlier tonight. See if you can hear it in the background. It was certainly loud enough to me to hear with my headphones on. Anyway, getting off the point, I am playing the game that is arriving tomorrow. I'm playing Red Rising as my oath.
Nice.
Very keen.
It's good.
you didn't deter me in any way, Jules. You just made me even more happy that that's arriving in the post tomorrow. So I cannot wait. I'm a Stonemaier fanboy, but I got to admit I didn't love Pendulum, which was his last game that he produced, but this one looks right up my alley. Awesome multi-use cards, all that sort of stuff. Can't wait. What about you, Mike?
My oath was Mythic Battles Pantheon.
Oh, yeah.
So Greek mythology, gods and warriors fighting. So it's been collecting dust for a long time. Finally got it to the table. Look, so before I say what I thought of it, I played like the tutorial maps. So in the game, the main goal you have two goals. You either got to try to kill the opposition's god, because you have a god, a hero, and troops. So if you can kill their god, you win. Or you have to pick up three, I knew I was going to forget what it was called, Omphathos? It's a weird name. It's basically like special stones. You have to absorb two of them in this version. So normally
Infinity
in the game...
Infinity stones?
Not Infinity stones. Omphalos? Omphalos is the name of them. They're called Omphalos.
Oh, okay.
Just keep it simple. But in a normal game... In a normal game, you've got to typically draft the actual heroes and everything that you're going to do. You have a certain amount of points, and you're going to draft everyone and pick who you want. And there's a lot more Omphathos on the map, and there's also terrain, all these different things. The introductory mission that we did, is a bit simpler. You only have to pick up two, so it's made to be a lot quicker, and they pick the people for you. So I had like Ares and some Hippolytes, whatever they're called, Hippolytes, I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. So it was fun. It didn't blow me away, but it was the introductory version, and I've got about a meter high stack of expansions of this game.
That's
I've got
not a lot an of understatement.
I've got a lot of it. So I definitely want to try it again to see if it's going to stay in my collection. I have a feeling it will. I just think that the introductory game where it teaches you how to play wasn't that great. But, you know, when you're not picking your own people, it's a shorter mission. There's less backwards and forwards. It just felt like it ended a bit quick. But I think it's meant to. So I'm going to give it another try. But that was Mythic Battles Pantheon. The minis are amazing. That's one big thing. The minis are absolutely gorgeous. If you like Greek mythology and minis, you're going to love it. Next, I've been getting... I've surprised myself lately that I've been getting into the Roll and Writes. And I blame like Mitch and Connor for this, because I didn't think I liked them. I really didn't. But I've been starting to get into them. So I've been looking at a game on my shelf for a while that's been collecting dust as well. And that's Welcome to New Las Vegas. And I haven't played the Welcome to base game yet. I'm not playing it at all. And I know this one's a bit harder. I remember watching a video where they started explaining it. And I'm like, oh, this doesn't seem too hard. And they kept going. And going, and it's like, this is the Roll and Write, mate. I don't think these are supposed to be that difficult, but it looks got a bit going on. But I'm going to give it a go. Roll and Write, I think I can play it by myself if I need to. I can be a Lonely Island person like Mitch and do it solo, I believe, or I can get some other people if I can talk them into it. So, I'm Michael Faruja, will be playing Welcome to New Las Vegas by the time I'm on the podcast next.
Mike, are you familiar with the hashtag Cartier's challenge that's been getting around?
Yeah.
I reckon you could get Mythic Battles Pantheon and put Marvel United on top of it, and that's all you'd need. So for those who don't know, it's like, how tall am I in board games?
Yeah. No, I don't think Marvel won't do it, but if I got Mythic Battles and my Zombicide collection, I think I'd do okay.
It's leaning over.
Yeah, with my collection, I think I could make like actually, five versions of myself on there.
Actually, that Zombicide is actually a load bearing stack.
Yep.
Yeah, it is.
It's leaning.
Okay, Jules, what about yourself, mate?
All right, so I had two oaths to do. Not that I failed one, I just committed to two. So the first one was to play the second mode, solo mode of Vindication, which I did. And it's so much better than the first one. Much more game in it. I attempted it three times and I felt like I had my teeth kicked in every time.
Nice.
It is so hard. And look, I will say, I think there's quite a bit of luck because there's a bit of dice rolling to see what the monster does in the game. But there are things you can do to mitigate what might happen, but you can get some bad runs that absolutely kick you in places you don't like. So it was difficult and I'm going to give it more shots until I beat it. So
cool.
Much, much more fun than the first one, which I think I was able to figure out a way to break the game. So yeah, that was done. And the second one was to play an actual game with other people of Anachrony rather than just solo. And I did that. And so I have to say thank you to Ryan, Paul and James for coming along and playing that with me. It was great. Oh, it's so good playing it with other people. The board felt a lot tighter playing at its max player count with four. Really, really enjoyed that. I know it's an intimidating looking game because there is a big table presence with it and a humongous box because I got the Infinity box, but it's not that complicated. It's really not. It's straightforward once you know the symbology. It's really easy. And so those guys picked it up really well and we had a great time. So can't wait to play it some more.
Cool.
So my next oath is I'm going to do a bit of a throwback to one I did a long time ago. Don't remember what episode it was, but that's to revisit Windward.
Oh, yeah.
So I swore to play that a while ago and I did it, but I did it solo. I'm yet to play this with other people. And look, I played the solo game. I had a fun time. I won on my first go. So that's why I haven't been pulled to go back. But I don't know how it plays against other players. And this is a full-on in-your-face, take that fighting, pick up and deliver game. And I love Take That. And I love the concept of this game, but I'm actually yet to play it with other people. And I've fell in love with the concept so much that I've got the big box coming at some point this year without actually ever playing the first version. So I really hope I enjoy it with other people. Otherwise, oh well. But
someone else in the marketplace does.
Yeah, that's right. But the artwork's phenomenal. The minis are really cool with the Crestors that you have to fight. So anyway, I, Jules Watson, swear to play Windward with other people by the time I'm next on the podcast.
Nice one. All right. So as per usual, our guests, we're going to hold you to something. So
I suppose I'll go first, shall I?
Sure thing, Ollie. Lead us out.
Spare you to the last, Jack. Okay, so my unplayed game collection is scary. I call it the Calyx of Shame. So,
don't worry, Mike's got five Calyxes of Shame.
Okay. That's okay then. So, I'm banned from buying games unless I want them. So, so that's all good. All right, so I've made a list of 12. If I read them out, are the rules that I have to play everyone, or can I sort of narrow it down?
You only have to choose one.
You have to pick one.
All right, okay, yeah. So listen. So I've got, these are ones that are staring at me every time I leave the house. So Twilight Imperium, never played. U-Boot.
With
the cardboard submarine. Yeah. I just had to buy it. Spectre Ops. That's Xeno Hunters kind of vibe there. Mm-hmm. Possibly hidden movement. Devastation of Indines. Ever played?
I have not heard of that one.
No. I think it's like a Street Fighter, but you use little cardboard standy things. It's supposed to be very good. I've also wanted to try an RPG. So I've just got Aliens the RPG
and
Vampire the Masquerade as well. I bought them all. Never played one before, but yeah, eventually one day. So can't do that by myself. Gale Force 9 Aliens. Jaws of the Lion. The Estates.
Oh, The Estates. That's my vote.
The Crew. Oh, wow. Suburbia and Smartphone Inc.
Oh, wow. That's a solid list.
Yeah, I want to hear the one we haven't heard of before. That's one I want. I want to hear about the one that we've none of us have heard of before.
Devastation of Indies.
Maybe that one, yeah. That's what, that gets my vote.
So I've narrowed it down to Spectre Ops because of the Xeno vibe and Devastation of Indians. Maybe I'll do both. I'll try.
Oh, nice.
I was keen for U-Boot, man. I want to... that looks so interesting because it's like a real-time game.
Yeah
you use an app and got plot charts and all sorts of things.
Oh, there you go. So you got to go with, you got to make a choice, or you got to say two?
Oh, I'm going to go with Devastation of Indians and Pet Spectros. I'll go two.
Nice.
Yep.
Nice.
Well, the good thing is it's a rarity, but Ollie's the local to me. He lives 10 minutes from where I work. So we could always organize a bit of a game day and help each other out with some oaths.
Sneak off to somewhere and have a game in your lunch break or something.
I'm down.
Cole's car park or something.
all right. Well, I can offer that same suggestion to Jack. So I'm interested to see what Jack is going to swear to play. What have you got? What have you got on your show?
Yeah, I actually I've backed so many like random little like tiny indie games and stuff on Kickstarter, and they keep arriving, and I'm like, oh, I'll bust this out and have a go, and then you know, so I have a little shelf of all those kind of things. But I think what I might do is there's a little game that I got that looks so adorable. Called Mini Memory Mischief. It was very small, very good, but it's this cute kind of pixel style mint tin game. I might see if I can give that a go. It's two players, so I might bust that out on the table and give the creator some feedback as well, I think, or give it a rating and try and help them out a little bit. That'll be
nice one.
Yeah.
There we go. So what was it called again, sorry?
Mini Memory Mischief.
Mini Memory Mischief. There you
yeah,
go.
That's what I can see on the shelf from here. So I'm like, yeah, I'll
that'll win.
Nice.
Awesome. So as per usual, guys, because obviously you're guests, you won't be on the next show, or you know, when you can't say when, unless we'll have you back, I'm sure. But like the next time when you're on the podcast might be who knows how long. So feel free to take some photos when you do play those games, throw them up onto our socials, and we can all, yeah,
we'll do
the fact yep. that you've actually got it done. But before we get going, because that ends the show, but before we get going, guys, where can people find out about you guys and the projects that you're doing? I'll go back to Ollie.
Okay, yeah, so you can look me up, probably the best place, at Board Citizen on Instagram or at Matchbox Empires. They're the two main places I upload, so.
Yeah, nice one. And Jack?
Halfmonstergames.com is the nerve center of it all, but we're also very active on Instagram and over on YouTube as well. So,
nice one. I remember watching your video of Trust Me, I'm a Superhero.
Yes.
Oh, yeah. Have you seen the Xeno Hunters one?
No, I haven't actually.
Boys, it's up now. It's good.
check it out.
We were like, we filmed it in a laser force.
Laser Quest, yeah, or something.
In a laser force, yeah, yeah. Now my friend Nick, who was the villain in the Transformer Superhero one, is like the alien this time, and I'm just gonna keep getting everyone to like abuse him in every video. But yeah, we leaned into the campiness again because, you know, may as well.
All right, awesome. Well, thank you very much again for coming on the show. It's been a pleasure.
Thank you, guys. This has been great. Keen to come again.
And that will do us for tonight. Thanks, Mike. Thanks, Jules.
Thank you, guys. Great fun.
Thanks, awesome. Everyone.
And we'll catch you on the next episode. Cheers.
Thank you.
Thank you for listening to the Board Game Barbecue. This episode, number 85, was recorded on March 14th, 2021 and went live on March 15th, 2021. Tonight's hosts were Steve, Mike, and Jules, with special guests Jack from Half Monster Games and Ollie from Board Citizen. As always, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Advent Games and 2D6, for all and all of our patrons. Thank you for your support. Don't forget to enter into our giveaway by going to our post, the Board Game Barbecue community, and commenting on the most you have ever paid for postage for a board game. If you'd like to find out more about the Board Game Barbecue, head to our website, www.boardgamebarbecue.com, the Board Game Barbecue community on Facebook, our Discord channel, for which there's a link in the show notes. Follow us on Twitter or Instagram, our handle is at Board Game Barbecue. Subscribe to our YouTube channel for reviews, unboxings, and that video that Mike spoke about earlier tonight for his, I've already forgotten the name, Mike, what was
cool.
it? Stay cool. Excellent. And remember that we record two episodes every week, releases on Mondays and Thursday mornings, Australian time. However, there is a special, call it episode 84B coming shortly because we had a bit of a technical issue that we couldn't get the file. We've got the file, so very soon you'll actually get three episodes in a week just as a one-off. So but if that's still not enough barbecue, then you can become a patron and you'll get even more content. If you'd like to hear what that content is like, episode 84 was an episode of our Patreon content because we didn't have an episode to put out, so that'll give you a bit of a window into what you can expect from the extra content you get from there, as well as plenty of other perks, including just helping our show continue to grow. If you'd like to become a patron, head to the link in the show notes or to patreon.com and search for the Board Game Barbecue. A reminder that our Brisbane event on March 27th has sold out, but I can tell you we are literally days, maybe even hours, maybe it's already even happened, away from announcing the Sydney Game Day. It is locked in. We're just waiting on a few things before we can give out particulars. So that's definitely happening. And there was also a second Brisbane Game Day that is also all but locked in. And there's very soon to be a similar announcement about a Melbourne Day. So plenty of Board Game Barbecue Game Days in the future. But finally, thank you for listening. And here's hoping your next game is a sizzling one. Cheers.